Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
This is a special edition with our guests, Heather Monroe, followed by Kathy Campanelli.
Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm your host, DJ Impact. I got some of the bad boys with me, like Sin City Steve.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, good, good. King Lucky.
If you smell what the king's cooking.
Mm, interesting. And Matt Michaels.
You know, I like Marilyn Monroe. Okay. But there's another Monroe that I like better because of her fight.
Oh. Look at you.
Well, there we have it.
Man. Well, let me get to who you're talking about here. She was trained from the Santino Brothers Wrestling Academy, and she's taken indie wrestling scene by storm. Most importantly, she is the queen of the Bayhive. From Los Angeles, California, Vegas, Bad Boys welcomes Heather Monroe.
Yes. Yeah. Hello.
So, Heather, I'm going to start off with, a little tidbit because, fans won't know this, but you went to get your hair did today and we saw the picture. It looks like pretty damn good job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a great job.
Is there someone that you're going to in particular, or do you find because a lot of times as a performer, you know, when you find something or someone that works for you, you tend to continue to go to the same place. Is there someone in particular that you go to for, you know, like your hair, your clothing?
Yeah, I go to this in Pasadena, California, and my girl Margaret hooks me up every time. She makes my hair look great. She's the only one I trust with it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's very important. I know I did a commercial. I did a commercial once. They sent me down to somewhere in Venice Beach, and they proceeded to basically shave my head, but yet they also bleach blonded it. But you couldn't even tell because they shaved it. It was just like, oh, man. So, yeah.
Interesting.
I feel like that's a whole nother story.
Awesome, Heather. So let's start at the beginning. When did you decide that you wanted to get into the wrestling business?
Well, as most people, I watched it when I was younger. I started watching it about 2001 when I was 11. And Lita and Trish and all of them were there doing their thing. And that's when I decided I wanted to be a wrestler. But my mom didn't like that idea. Obviously, I was like 11-year-old girl. And she was like, that's not something that you should be doing. So I kind of watched off and on, like, through high school and college. And then I moved out to California from Iowa in 2012. And after spending a couple of years out in California, I was like kind of doing the acting thing and I kind of hated it. And I started watching Total Divas.
Yeah.
And right. And so I was like, hey, this was something I really loved. I loved watching it and I loved the idea of doing it. And these girls are doing it. So like, why can't I do it? So I, looked into wrestling schools and I found Santino's, and the rest is kind of history.
Who was your first trainer at Santino's?
My trainers, actually Famous B was my first trainer at Santino's outside of, Robbie Phoenix, has always been there. Joey Chaos, and Silvio Nunez, they were always there, but Famous B was technically the trainer of the beginners.
Right.
When I first started, and I kind of had in and out trainers. Robbie Phoenix and Joey Chaos and Los Luchas have been my like main trainers, but I got trained by Ray Rosas at one point, Tito Escondido. Like, there's been a couple in and out of Santino's like that.
That's wonderful. Yeah, that's. I mean, there's some good names there too, and that shows it, with Santino Brothers. what I like about it was within the last, I'd say, 3-4 years, they've really stepped up their exposure. You know, they're high class now in terms of getting to be, once again, like SoCal had so many good wrestling schools, and now Santino's Brothers is like reestablishing that that golden standard, and you're definitely you're proving it. You know, one of the things that I absolutely think that you're starting to nail is the precision of your character in the moments that are the in-between moments, where you're finding those beats of giving, you know, just a certain look, or, you know, some kind of small physical reaction that if people, you know, who are listening, who might be, you know, starting in wrestling, or even veterans who really don't get storytelling yet, I encourage them to start watching your matches, because that's what I'm seeing, and it's fabulous. I mean, you're doing a hell of
a job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, they actually, one of the things that I really appreciated too about Santino's is once we got all of the kind of work put in and learning the wrestling and like that kind of stuff, they brought in Kevin Condren to do character classes as well. So he did a lot of work with me, with Brody, with Jake, with a lot of us that kind of took us to the next level to be out of our heads and be able to be in the moment in the ring, which I think is the only way you can really do those in-between moments, is if you're not too worried about everything else that's happening and you're in the moment and actually reacting to what's going on.
Exactly. You just nailed that. Like, if that were, you know, if you had a textbook, you just put in a nice little addition for people to, you know, absorb. That's freaking, you nailed that. That was beautiful. Well said.
Thanks.
Awesome. And obviously, in your career, you've not shied away from intergender wrestling. How do you feel about the future of intergender wrestling and what it's grown to be over the last few years?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was the only girl in my class, which a lot of girls are, the only women in their training. So I was used to that. I was used to one of my favorite parts about Santino is that they didn't treat me differently. I think there's some schools that'll go a little easier. They won't even teach the girls a lot of the moves that they teach the guys because they're like, oh, you'll never do this. But it was important to me that they treated me the same as the guys. And I think that example set both me up for being able to do those types of matches without any fear or like feeling like I'm competent in them. And it sets the dudes up for feeling comfortable with working with women and feeling like it's, you know, it's the same as if they're wrestling a guy.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that I think is changing right now is people are realizing that women and men can be the same and be on that same level, and it doesn't matter. Like, as long as everyone's treated as an athlete, everyone can do the same stuff, you know?
Yeah. That's a very good point. I know when I was training in wrestling, there was, like you said, one woman in the class, and it was one of those things where she did not want to be treated any differently than any one of us. And it was excellent, you know. I think when you show that you are there to not only absorb the wrestling but to take it to that next level, where it's like, well, I'm not going to only just be as good as, I'm going to be better than some of the guys there, then people pay attention to you. And I think that's something that I think that you've grasped, is that you are working hard, whereas some people just want the admiration handed to them. And that is, you know, it's definitely, again, it's paying off because you're seeing this character development. And I think that, like if you tune into Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, anytime you're on that, it's like the show just gets that much better. And I'm not blowing smoke up your ass or anything like that. I mean, it is true. I know it's a good... If I can see an episode where I see you in a match and I see Suede and Bay in a match, you know, those are the kind of things that it's like, oh man, this is good wrestling. And I think, yeah, you know, and I think that it's set up where, you know, you're accomplishing a lot. What was it like to hold the NWA Women's title for 900 days?
What was that?
What was it like to hold the NWA Women's title for 900 days?
I didn't hold the women's title.
Are you kidding? Oh, no. It was Jazz, right?
Yes.
That's right, because they set up the...
Yeah.
They set up
I
the...
Jazz for it.
That's right. Oh,
I
man.
Wish I would have, but...
Well, you
I
know,
got the opportunity to wrestle her right before she... I was the last person she defended against, I believe.
Yeah.
Before vacating it, and that was a really cool opportunity that I really appreciated from Dave and Billy to like me enough and to feel like I had enough presence to kind of have that match with Jazz, and a big opportunity to wrestle one of my childhood heroes too. So
yeah,
that was really cool.
Yeah, and that just took place back in February of this year. So I mean, that's,
yeah, it was very recent.
Yeah, that shows the trust that you're developing with them too. Because I, you know what, that's the other thing too. Dave doesn't like just hand out opportunities. You know, he
yeah,
really is. He's smart with what he does. So that's, I mean, amazing to see that happen, where you're getting to wrestle someone that you watched when you were just getting into wrestling. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
All right, Heather, let's change gears just a little bit here. What kinds of things do you like to do outside of the ring on your time off?
I mean, I really like just being around my friends and having a good time. The stuff that I like to like indulge in is like, I love true crime. I love comedy. I like doing like entertaining things like that. I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts and stuff like that. Watch a lot of Dateline.
What show are you most hooked on?
Right now, I've been watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and
hell,
I've just
yeah,
been like watching it nonstop.
Hell yeah!
So I'm like, once I get on a track, I got to finish it up, and then I'll move on to the next.
Where are you right now in Nine-Nine's?
I am almost done. Like, I'm
okay
at the end of season 5 right now.
Awesome. Like, when Jake and Amy finally got together, was that not the best?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of knew it was... The thing about watching it late is I knew it was going to happen, but
right,
it was still really, really cute.
Yeah, it's the stuff they do, especially the scavenger hunt, the... You know, when they hide the whatever they're looking for every season, that's like the
mm-hmm
best fucking type of thing. I love when television shows do that, where it's, you know, one thing to take it into the next season, into the next season, into the next season. You always look forward to something.
Yeah.
Are there any places that you enjoy going to in Hollywood or, you know, the LA area? Any favorite like eateries or anything like that?
Not that I can think of specifically. I kind of like to try a little bit of everything. I don't really have, like... I am a creature of habit, but I like to try new things, so I don't really have specific places I go to all the time.
Let me ask you this. You posted a picture for National Donut Day, and we have a debate. I'm actually losing the debate. This is King Lucky. does jelly belong in a donut?
I'm not opposed to it, but I don't prefer it.
That's what we said.
Boom.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. I must just be weird, then.
You are.
No, I'm not weird.
Yes,
but
you are.
Well, yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, then.
Because you also put pineapple on a pizza, so you're weird.
Is that outlawed, Heather? Pineapple on a pizza.
I don't like cooked fruit in general.
Right.
I guess
like,
I
don't even like apple pie or anything like that.
Really?
I don't like anything. No cooked fruit. I'm not into it.
Oh, my God. You've traveled you know, quite a bit for wrestling. Is there a particular town that is probably your favorite you know, to visit when you're out and seeing the world?
It's really hard to say. I really loved going to New York this past WrestleMania week.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the place that I've gone consistently that I really like is Austin.
Okay, yeah.
Because I'm vegetarian, and I would just go eat all of the amazing vegan food down there, and it just has a cool vibe down there, too, so I really liked Austin.
So you were there for in New York for WrestleMania week. Did you actually attend the show?
I attended a couple of shows. I wasn't on any. I went there for other work and then just decided, you know, I'll hang out and see all my friends and have a good time.
Oh, yeah.
And, so I went to a couple shows to watch people. But other than that, it's just a fun atmosphere to be in.
Right. And do you feel like that kind of takes the pressure off? Are you looking forward to maybe doing something in Tampa this upcoming year?
Yeah, of course. I'm hoping to continually up my game and make strides to be on the next level. So
yeah.
I'm hoping next year it'll happen for me.
Yeah, let's hope she's wrestling in Tampa next year at the big show.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
yeah,
that'd be pretty cool too.
That would be pretty cool. How inspiring was it for you as a female wrestler to see the women headline the main event of WrestleMania?
I was really happy to see that, obviously. I mean, I think the women that did it too were so deserving of it. They all bring something different that they've built in wrestling, and I think it wasn't just, okay, fine, we'll put the women in the main event, which was more, what was more inspiring was that was actually the story that everyone cared about.
Yeah.
So it was the most logical one to put in that spot too. It wasn't just like, okay, we'll do this because it's progressive or whatever. I felt like it was actually really deserved, and all those women have worked really hard to change the perception of women in sports in general.
Right. That's totally true. Do you see yourself in terms of, you know, stylistic, being able to compete on that level of athleticism? Because I think you're a pretty damn good athlete. And with the way they're stepping everything up, it's pretty cool. Do you see yourself on the level of, like, and I don't mean comparing, like, you know, wrestling styles or anything, but like a Charlotte Flair or a Becky Lynch, I think you could hang with them. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I think in terms of telling a story with more than just moves, I think that I'm really good at that kind of stuff, and I think that I would excel in that kind of a situation.
You'd probably do better than Lacey's doing right now. I hate to say it. I love her, but, you know, I see where you... You know, again, you said it. It's, I think she's missing a little of the character attributes in the ring.
She's very new.
Yep.
She's very new to wrestling.
Exactly.
To wrestling in general.
Yep. Yeah.
So it's hard for someone that comes in and they're very athletic, but they don't necessarily understand wrestling, or they haven't watched it for a long time. So they're kind of fresh to everything that's going on. And I think you can be an athlete and be good at that, but the intangibles might not be there for a bit.
That's so true.
Yeah. And you've had so many matches, you know, through the years, even though you're still, you know, very early on in your career. Who's your favorite in-ring dance partner that you've been in there with?
Oh, that's a hard one. Because I have a couple.
Oh, well, there you go. It doesn't just have to be one. You can name off a few.
Well, Taya has become one of my favorite opponents. I think she always pushes. She always pushes me to be better, and she. I feel like we have really good chemistry too when we get in the ring together. I always like to wrestle Ruby Reyes. She's another person that I have really good chemistry with, and she was kind of the person that ushered me in. Once I started, she was the person I was wrestling all the time when I first started. So those two, for sure, they've always pushed me and made me a little bit better.
You know, that's interesting that you said Taya, because you had a match here in Vegas at FSW. with Taya and Suede. And man, the work that the three of you did was impeccable. I mean, it was, you know, sometimes you could just sit back with, you know, like you're at a movie, just like with a bucket of popcorn, and just be so fucking entertained in wrestling. And that match, I mean, that was it. It was just like, oh my God. Like, you know, and I'd seen you do other things before and stuff. And that's when I was like, Heather's starting to hold her own. Like,
thank you.
Yeah, seriously. And it's just so fun to watch, because it's like, you know, it's almost like watching like characters on a television series. When it starts, you kind of get familiar with them. But like season four or five, they start hitting a stride. And that's where I'm starting to see you're at that season three, season four-ish, you know, where it's like, okay, now it's getting really entertaining. I'm understanding the character. You're understanding the character. And it's remarkable. And please, anytime you're in Vegas, we want you to wrestle. Come out, keep coming out, because...
You know, yeah, it's I love awesome. Coming out to Vegas to wrestle too. It's always a good time.
Yeah, and about a month ago, we watched you wrestle at the Raja show versus Casey Spinelli, which was a very fun match. And you know, in that match, you played a face, but you also have played heel. When you were, you know, coming up and you were watching wrestling, did you gravitate more towards the heels or the faces?
I definitely gravitated, oddly enough, more towards the faces, but mainly because my favorites were the Hardy Boys and Lita.
Yeah,
and they were always like, I wasn't watching when Lita turned heel. They were always big baby faces, but I always appreciated, and my favorite part about the heels and like what I love about being a heel is how funny some of the heels could be. Like Trish Stratus was just an amazing heel, and she was so fun to watch.
Yes,
and I loved watching the heels that would look dumb and like could do silly things, and it was just so entertaining. And that's always been kind of the type of character in general that I want to be.
Yeah, Victoria was really good. Lisa Marie could.
I mean, yes.
Oh, she was great at doing that. Like as soon as you said that, like, you know, kind of the heel looking just kind of like dumb and stuff. Oh, she was so good at that.
I hope she goes in the Hall of Fame eventually. Nice to
hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, in 2017, you wrestled on Monday Night Raw against Nia Jax. How did that situation come about?
It's like so long ago now.
Right.
It was, you know, the thing is, like, they have extras there every show.
Yeah.
And you kind of just go in and they're like, okay, you're going to do it. It's very simple. It's not necessarily merit-based. But the whole experience was very cool because you got to see actually how they got to put matches together and how everything kind of works on more of the inside level, whereas like when you're just sitting and doing catering, you can see how everything goes, but you don't get to see like the insight into how things are put together. So it was a cool experience, and Nia was really, really cool. And the way that it worked, she was so cool under pressure. We had 3 minutes when we were originally had the match. And as we were waiting to go out, she came up to me. She's like, okay, well, we only have like 2 minutes now. And then she had to do her entrance, a match, and a promo.
Wow.
And so then she comes to me, and like right before I go out, she's like, okay, we only have 30 seconds for the match, so I'm really sorry, but that's all that we have. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And so like I'm walking out, and she has to do all this stuff in 3 minutes. And I was just like, man, good for her. Like that's what people don't get about WWE is like how much pressure all those people are under every single time that they go out there, especially someone like her that doesn't have a lot of experience but is being built as this monster. She's always going to have to do stuff like that.
Right.
So I really appreciate that experience, and I think it made me have a higher understanding of like what they have to go through when they're doing stuff like that.
Well, you know, and that's very interesting, that perspective of it, because I think a lot of the fans just think that, you know, there's the writers backstage and the writers are telling everyone what to do and what to say and et cetera, et cetera. Yet here is a talent having to convey to you, like the producer's not even conveying this. It's like, hey, we're at Gorilla. Yeah. Guess what? 30 seconds now, everyone. 30 seconds. Let's do this. And that's so sweet. Yeah. It's so sweet of her, too, to be apologizing like that. To, like, I'm so sorry that the match is, like, she doesn't have to do that. That's amazing. You know?
No, and, like, and originally it was, like, because we had, like, I had a little bit more stuff that I was able getting sure. in. And so she, like, you know, no one likes to be in that position that she's in. Like, no one right. wants to just go out and have it not be a competitive match, because that's not necessarily entertaining for anybody that is involved in the match.
Right. Well, it's, you know, it is a dance. It's, you know, it's something where, you know, I think the sometimes the fandom, you don't realize as a fan that really you're just as, unless the person's a real, you know, piece of work, you're really helping, you know, you want to get that other person over as much as you want to be over as well. And in fact, sometimes it's even more important to, you know, try to give a little bit more because you want to help out. And it's just fascinating that aspect of it. Do you think as you're learning and as you're growing, do you think that's kind of one of the reputations that you're getting, is that bookers and wrestlers, you know, talent are getting to know that, hey, if I work with Heather, that I'm in good hands because, you know, we can work together and communicate well in the ring and we can call a good match. Is that something that you feel like, you know, you're finally hitting that point where people are going, yeah, if we can name our reliable people, Heather's on the top of the list?
Yeah, I definitely think, anyone from Santino's can be considered in that category. I think we're known as a school that can come in and be reliable workers. And I think that's kind of always been the reputation as long as even when I started training there. But I think what I've found out, and from what bookers and promoters tell me, is that they do expect that from me, and that they are happy to have me there because I'm able to kind of come in and lead anybody, or because I can come in and really know what I'm doing and help along newer people a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And beyond that, just other workers have been really kind to me and telling me, like, oh, I know I'm gonna have fun in this match because you're in it. And so that always makes me feel good, because, you know, if you're not having fun, like, there's no point in doing it, you know?
Exactly. You hit it big time. Speaking about people who have fun, we talked recently with Jack Jameson, and he just could not, like, I think the question that Lucky asked him was, you know, who would you say is an up-and-comer or something like that, or what is it like working with Heather Monroe? And he just had beaming words. I think he said, you're one of the biggest talents out there.
Yeah, that isn't signed yet.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jack.
You know, what is it like when you meet personalities like Jack? Like, is it just cool when you just go, wow, look at the business I'm in? Because, like, I mean, you work in an office, you're not going to meet that kind of personality.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, yeah.
No, there's a lot of different personalities in wrestling, that's for sure. It's a very eclectic group of people.
Yeah. And what's, let me ask you this, what's the origins of your minx? Because that's your signature.
Of my what?
The minx, your fur.
Oh. I don't know. I kind of was looking for something. I originally was going to wear just a glittery jacket. And then I kind of wanted to, it was just kind of the vibe of the character. I saw it one day and I was like, no, I'm going to wear a fur coat. I'm going to, like, be, it's bougie. It's kind of like, ugh, this bitch. You know, like, so I felt like it fit the character pretty well.
Yeah, you could even add in like a champagne flute in there too, and I mean, I think
yeah,
that would just totally go with the gimmick.
Definitely.
And one other really cool thing that you were a part of was you did some wrestling on tour with one of my favorite artists, one of Maynard James Keenan's bands, Pussifer.
Yeah.
So could you just kind of, you know, tell us a little bit about that and what that situation was like?
Yeah, that was so it was really funny. I was training still, and this would have been July 2015-ish, and they came to Los Santinos, and they were like, hey, we want to run tryouts for this thing, and it didn't make sense. Like, they weren't very upfront with everything. They were like, this band wants this thing, but they never said it was, they didn't say it was Maynard's band. They were like, it's a very, like, well-known artist. He wants to do this, that, and the other thing. And we're all like, okay, well, we'll try out anyways. And we kind of just ran some stuff. And me and Katarina and Chaos and Robbie Phoenix and Eli all got picked for it. And then we found out who it was for. And we're like, okay, well, they're all bitter from wrestling, right? But I'm new to it, so I'm like, this is great, this is gonna happen. And they're like, okay, well, we'll see once we're like there, we'll see. And so it all started in Dallas of it was in October. I had my debut match with Santino's, and then a week later we were off on tour for the first 6 weeks, and we ended up doing three U.S. tours, a European tour, and Australia-New Zealand loop.
Wow.
And it was one of the, I couldn't have asked for a better experience. I was brand new. I was on the road wrestling 5 days a week in front of 1,000-plus crowds with my trainers. So it was just like dream come true. Like, I couldn't have asked for a better experience to start and, like, be able to kind of hone my craft and, like, get more reps in, not necessarily in front of wrestling crowds, to get my confidence and work on everything.
That's awesome. And along those lines, you've worked, you know, quite a few places. Internationally, how do you feel like the crowds are different from, you know, like in the States here?
Well, the thing that I definitely noticed was that they're a little less, like, I think it's the same with, like, when you watch Japanese wrestling, they're just not as vocal the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
They're very much like, oh, this exciting thing happened, that's very cool. But they're not, like, going the whole time. But also, it wasn't wrestling crowds, so it's kind of hard to tell what the actual wrestling crowds would be like over there. It was very much Maynard fans and, like, fans of Pussifer that were like, what's happening? But they, like, everyone, most places really got on board and appreciated what we were doing, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Also, you've wrestled a few times under Luchadora mask.
Yeah, that's when I wrestled under the mask.
Yeah. How cool was that? I mean, is it a totally different feel when you wrestle under the Luchadora?
Yeah, definitely. She, the character is completely different from what I am, and it's always fun to, like, I created that character from the ground up, and when I get to play her, it's a complete 180 from what I'm normally doing.
Yeah, that's amazing. That shows a lot of versatility, too. I mean, because you also kind of have to work different move sets and, you know, the way you work the crowd as a luchadora versus your regular, you know, style of wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. And so, Heather, just really quickly, we're going to do a segment on here. I'm going to do some word association. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read off a list of names to you, and just tell me the first thing that pops into your head when I say the names. And we're going to do this for 70 seconds, okay? Are you ready?
Okay. Yep.
All right. So we'll start off pretty easy. First off, Santino Brothers.
Love.
Laura James.
Bay.
Douglas James.
done.
Future stars of wrestling.
Second home.
Royce Isaacs.
Beefy boy.
Taya Valkyrie.
Bay times two.
Jake Atlas.
Bomb.
Joey Ryan.
Dick.
Nice. Perfect.
That was awesome.
Championship Wrestling from Hollywood.
Fabulous.
Shotzi Blackheart.
Ballsy.
Sandra Moon.
Love.
And last but not least, Hood Slam.
Oh, this is real.
Awesome.
So, you know, speaking of that, you know, with that list, I think Steve, you know, brought up some great names, but there's one person who I just think is fabulous as a counter with you, and that is Halston.
Yes.
I mean, so how did you, because I mean, he was with Santino Brothers as well. How did you guys end up, you know, getting together? Because, damn, it's like, he's got one of the best, I think, manager gimmicks I've seen in a long time, and it's so fun, and it's perfect with you.
Yeah, Halston's so good at what he does. He's like probably one of the, I would say he's one of the best managers on the indies, if not the best, and he's going to blow up. I just know it because he's got the work ethic, he's got the character, and I obviously knew him from Santino's. Manages Dom Kubrick as well.
Right.
And I had kind of been a little aimless on Hollywood. So I was like, what can I do to elevate my character a little bit more and to have a little bit more going on? And so I talked to them a lot. I was like, please, can I have Halston as my manager? And Halston's my manager. Can please have Halston as my manager? You need to see him. You need to watch him. He's going to be perfect for me. And finally it happened, and they're realizing how perfect the characters are, just like, they match up so well together. So I begged to have him as my manager on Hollywood. So I was so happy when that finally happened.
That's, you know, and that shows, I think, to a great, you know, again, you know, when you're looking at these kind of things and you can sense something like that, like, hey, this clicks together. Can we do this? And for, you know, them to believe in it and just be like, okay, you know, let's try it. And it, just, I mean, it is freaking fabulous, I gotta say.
Yeah.
With that in mind, and being, you know, that you've had this experience, obviously, you're still wrestling, you've got a long way to go in your career, but could you see yourself down the road doing something like being a trainer, being even a producer, or a promoter or a booker, in terms of, you know, where you might see, you know, after, you know, 20 years in the ring, where you might see yourself maybe, you know, settling into a wrestling, you know, a second career almost?
I mean, I could definitely see myself helping train. I already help out at Santino's as an assistant trainer. So it's something that I really enjoy doing. I like helping, and I like kind of guiding people to learn and to get to another level. And I also like doing like agenting and stuff like that. I don't know if I could ever be a booker or a promoter. I think their jobs are a lot harder than people realize.
Yeah.
Especially to be a good one is really difficult. So I could never, I don't think I could ever take on that responsibility, but I would definitely love to be a trainer or something like that behind the scenes.
On social media, you have a great presence. You're right on that cusp of, you know, I guess that generation of, you know, kids now who are, you know, full on social media. Did you see it as a tool when it started getting hot that you could use to further your character, get your presence known? And is it something that you think that you know, those people who are using social media are definitely hitting the right, you know, buttons, because this is the way to get yourself seen and promoted.
Yeah, definitely. I think social media is everything. I mean, they look like, some promoters will just look at that and they'll see one GIF and they'll book you off of that anymore. It's, there's no sending in tapes, like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to have a presence and people to know you and know of you. And so I really started working hard to, this past year, build my social media presence and kind of build a brand around myself, as cheesy as that sounds, but to build a brand so that people know who I am and see what I'm doing. And I think people that neglect that or don't care about it, I think are doing themselves a disservice, because we are public figures no matter what level we're at in wrestling. So we need to be mindful of how we're presenting ourselves, or how we're putting ourselves out there, and making sure that we're putting our best foot forward in that regard.
Well, and it's very smart too, because I think one of the things that I'm very conscious of, and one of the reasons that we do this podcast, is because we don't want, you know, fans to just look at you now and say, oh yeah, they're a good wrestler, or, you know, 5 years from now they forget, you know, about it. We want people to stick with the brand. The brand is the most important thing. And I don't think it's, you know, corny or cheesy at all, because I think that's a lesson that a lot of people don't learn. It's, you know, when you associate something, if you can build that following, like 30 years from now, if you become a nurse or a, you know, a painter or something, people are still going to have an interest in what it is that you're doing, because they like you. And, you know, not just necessarily this character you played, or, you know, you don't get pigeonholed nowadays like you used to. You know, you do a movie, people see you as, you know, this character, and that's all they see you as for the rest of your career. And it's hard to get out of that. So I think you're going about it the right way, in the smart way. And, you know, that's something that, again, I can't encourage people enough. If they haven't seen Heather wrestle, please go on YouTube, you know, tune in, find out what you're missing, because, you know, and again, we don't blow smoke up people's asses here. This is, you know, like when we see something, you know, I look at it from different eyes than most fans, myself. Sin City Steve is a very, very picky guy when it comes to what he likes in his matches. And I can tell you, he, you know, when we said Heather was doing the show, he was like shaking like a 12-year-old kid, just going, oh my God.
Totally. He got out of work early just to make this interview.
Nice.
So yeah, so I mean, again, I mean, we encourage, where can fans and people wanting to get know you a little bit better in terms of your character and your career, where can they find you on social media?
I'm Heather Is Me on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook as well, just Heather Monroe there.
Excellent. Wonderful.
Well, Heather, you are welcomed anytime on our show. So anytime you want to promote something or get the word out, just let us know, and we'll put you on.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
How are you? Heather Monroe, everybody. Simon Street, how you doing?
How's everybody?
Good. Sin City Steve, how you do?
I am doing well. How are you guys?
Awesome. Matt Michaels, how you doing over there?
I am doing very, very cereal work.
You know what? Spell cereal for me.
Yeah.
Go. Because I want to see how you use using it.
See.
Okay.
A-I-R.
Yeah, okay. So that's what I thought. We got a special guest with us on the line. She's a pro wrestler, interviewer, a ring announcer, commentator based in SoCal, but also has a show called Let's Get Cereal. On the line with us, Kathy Cappanelli. How are you?
Hello, everyone. I'm so glad everyone's feeling cereal today.
That's right.
Absolutely. Definitely.
So, Kathy, what got your interest into professional wrestling?
So I watched when I was a very little kid. I watched with my great-grandfather, who had VHS tapes. Yeah, we're taking it back to VHS. of highlights of The Undertaker and Ric Flair. And I used to watch those as a kid. And then I fell off for a really, really, really long time. I really only got back into watching probably when I moved out here from the East Coast about like 4 years ago. So I had a lot of time to make up and a lot to kind of rediscover. So that's been kind of a really exciting journey, but definitely the larger than life personalities, the athleticism. I grew up doing a lot of theater. So I found a lot of correlations there just even as a kid when I was watching.
And with, being into theater, where did you find that you decided, hey, you know, it'd be kind of nice, I could use my talking ability to entertain people and become kind of a commentator type, whereas some people decide, hey, I'm going to allow my body to be thrown around and, you know, be very physical. You decided to rely on the voice. What was your determination and choice into that?
Well, what really helped was I went to a one-day tryout at Santino Brothers Wrestling Academy.
Yeah.
Over in Bell Gardens. Fantastic, amazing, amazing place. Literally changed my life because I went for the one-day tryout. You know, they had us get in the ring, try some bumping, all the cardio, all of the running, the squats, the everything. But then the last part of the day was the character development portion of it, where we got to, you know, cut a promo in the ring. You know, it almost felt a little bit like improv. And yeah. I think that was one of the pieces that where I was like, oh, wait a second. This actually feels really good. This is the piece that I feel the best doing. And then maybe 3 months after that, they ended up opening a managers and advocates and production training course at Santino Brothers. So that was a kind of a no-brainer of, oh, well, this is for me to do. So really went from there, like actually trying out the physical portion of it and realizing I felt that I would be able to serve the form better just with my voice.
And you've done a fine job. That's for sure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
So, you know, one question that I would like to ask is, you know, looking at some of the past interviews that you've done, me and you have something in mm-hmm. common, and I wanted to talk about it. You had talked about how when you were watching, you know, wrestling early on and with regards to The Undertaker, how you really weren't scared. But when it came to Paul Bearer, you found him to be incredibly creepy. I, too, as a young youth, felt the same way. Because although The Undertaker, early Undertaker, you could tell he still had, like, red hair and whatnot. And he still had, like, mm-hmm. like a tan. Paul Bearer creeped the heck out of me because he looked like someone who really, and he really was a funeral director, right? But his voice, his shrill voice scared the crap out of me.
Yes. Street.
Oh, yeah. Quit. It's just, like, I can imagine him, like, rolling on the side of my bed, coming under my bed. Oh, how are you doing? Tell us a little bit about what are some fears that he, that you went through with fears with Paul Bearer.
You know what, for me, same exact thing. It was the voice. It was just so off-putting, you know. I don't think I had necessarily nightmares of him crawling at the foot of my bed, but it was just this very unsettling feeling that I got every time I saw him on screen. And of course, you know, when you have this like towering damn monster behind him, it doesn't hurt, but for the most part, it was the voice. It was this, it made me feel wrong. It gave me like a chill. It just kind of struck me the wrong way, you know? And I think too, just like the sallow complexion and, you know, the the shadows under his eyes, like the way that mm-hmm. The physicality of him matched with the voice that was projected out of him was just a recipe for nightmare.
Yes.
It was just this perfect storm of eeriness. And I mean, aside from just like, you know, being a kid and not understanding like the concept of death and funerals, like it's, you know, a bummer, you know, to be able to have that kind of like that fear as well. And the idea of mortality that's so hard to wrap your mind around as a kid and as a person in general, it's just freaking weird. And kind of preying off of that as well. So I'm sure like deep down that was something that was going on, but on the surface, it was just everything physically and audibly about him.
So since you brought it up, what would you want to be written on your tombstone?
Oh, wow. You know, it's funny. And it's very strange that this actually came up in a conversation kind of recently.
oh, my God.
Very weird.
Yeah,
I live life on the edge, guys. You never know. I was talking to someone about it from Amy from Dark Light Clothing. You know, and they have a lot of, you know, Ars Moriendi and very macabre kind of subject matter for a lot of their designs. Yeah. And we were talking about it. And I was like, put it on my tombstone. She died as she lived, eating cereal.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was literally just the first thing that came to my mind, but I'm kind of just going to stick with it because I feel like it. I just want to be remembered as silly, and I want to be remembered as just, I want people to look at that and be like, eh, what a dope. I like it. That's my legacy, you know? That's what makes me happy.
So let's take that a step further. Okay, you've already said what you want written on your tombstone. Would you prefer people honor your name by bringing boxes of cereal in bowls and milk and leaving it at your grave? Would that be something that you would find? Wow. I'm being serious, guys, because she loves her cereal, but that'd be awesome.
Are you being serious or cereal?
I'm being seriously cereal as I can be. 100% Bran.
So if I'm really going to take this concept, I love the idea of that. I love the idea of that being how people like would honor my memory, but I'd rather someone create like a food drive that's like, hey, yeah. Kathy Campanelli, cereal girl is in her memory. We want to collect cereal for, you know, kids that can't afford breakfast. Mm. Do I feel terrible that like all of the artificial colors and sweeteners are probably just going to do way worse for people? Yes. Do I wish that I could be the patron saint of, like, vegan Eggs Benedict? Yes. but this is the path that I'm on, and I really have just committed to it full force. So I would want that to be kind of like a way to just feed people. I'm all about, you know, I come from an Italian family where it's always like, did you eat? Are you hungry? How can you take care of you? What do you want to eat? What can we feed you? So I would just want to, you know, it's such a basic human need that I would just want to make sure people are having met, and if my name is something that would help that happen, I would be honored.
What breakfast cereal has influenced your life the most?
It's funny because my all-time favorite is Golden Grahams. Mm-hmm. I have a whole like diatribe I can go on about why I love Golden Grahams so much. It's like my dissertation on Golden Grahams. But it's funny when I think about like you know how when you hear a song in your head, or you have like a you taste a flavor in your mouth just by thinking of it.
Right.
Is that weird? Am I the only person that does that?
Okay. No. I have the same thing.
Okay, I'm like, wait, let me just take a poll of the room, make sure I'm not crazy, which I am, but that's okay. For some reason, I always go back to Berry Berry Kicks as just like a staple of my childhood. For some reason, and I think about like the little shapes where they look like little berry clusters, and then you have the regular Kicks, and it's something that's such a quintessential piece of my childhood. And I think about like where I was when I was eating that cereal a lot, like as a 5 or 6 year old. So that's definitely for some reason an influence that stands out to me. But definitely Golden Grahams is my number one.
All right, then. So let's flip that on its ear. Golden Grahams is number one. What is your least favorite cereal?
Grape Nuts.
Well, there you have it. Grape nuts is never, honestly, didn't sound like, great.
It's concrete. Like, what?
It's hard. Grape nuts are hard.
Right? I feel like that's a chore to eat. Like, how is that enjoyable? I don't know. But yeah, that's instant grape nuts. Just.
So since we're getting in deep into cereal talk,
yeah,
I had I'll quickly give you a quick story of what this question pertains to. So I'm walking with my son in the store looking for cereal, and as most things that go on when you give six-year-olds a choice, it is long and drawn out and dramatic. And out of all the cereals we could have picked, he picks a new cereal that has come on to the stores. And it kind of goes with the question I'm about to ask you. With some of these newer cereals, like the one my son chose, called Sour Patch Kids cereal.
Oh, yeah.
Which I had the great joy of having a very unidentifying taste in my mouth. Let's put it that way. Still haven't been able to identify it. Have you, A, tried that cereal? B, what do you think? And a possible C, would you suggest that cereal for anybody?
And you're telling me a Sour Patch Kid left the odd taste in your mouth?
I would not be willing to state that publicly, but for the conversation, yes, the Sour Patch Kid did leave a sour taste in my mouth.
You know, it's like, okay, so first and foremost, yes, I did try it. I believe it's episode 2 or 3 of my show. I actually do a review on it.
Yeah.
I cannot remember offhand, but it was one of my early episodes. It might just live on IGTV, but it was rough. It was a rough one. So I remember taking like the first like bite or two and I'm like, hey, this kind of tastes like a creamsicle, like an orange creamsicle. Mm-hmm. It's very citrusy. I was like, this isn't too damn bad. Like, pretty cool. Okay. But then I got to the end, and without thinking, I was like, okay, here I am at the end of this bowl. Like, I'm getting a little tired of it, but whatever. And I tip it back, and I drink all the milk, and immediately go, oh, my God, why? Milk? What have I done? But by then, I had already committed. So yeah, it was a rough one. I would not recommend it. It did a number on my body, my taste buds, my soul. It was a very weird experience. I'm glad I can say I did it, because a lot of people have asked me, because it was such a striking, like, hey, this is a really weird flavor of cereal. Have you tried it? So I got the question a lot. So I'm glad that I can answer it from experience, but I would not do it again if I had the option. I had one bowl, and that was it.
Well, I can tell you right now, that box of cereal is still on the shelf, and I put my son through all types of morning hell when he says, I don't want that. So no, you're going to get that. You commit it, you eat it. So I'm forcing him to finish.
You make it said, you lie in it.
Yes, you eat it. So, this will probably be my last cereal question.
Better dry, though, I will say.
Yes, it is.
Better dry.
Yeah. What cereal brand would you say would need to be revived that's been lost in the archives of cereal history?
Oh, wow.
Come on, it's got to be Mr. T.
That would be good.
Oh, you know, that's actually a really good choice.
Yeah.
Actually, there was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cereal.
Oh, yeah.
I think I remember that.
I would love to see come back.
Yeah.
I don't know if it ever actually existed, but I think they had a Reptar cereal from Rugrats.
I think they actually did. They did have one, but it was like so short-lived. I think it only came out for the movie. The first movie that came out, they came out with Reptar cereal.
Yeah.
And it was marshmallows with Reptar on it, I remember.
Yeah.
I love that.
Ghostbusters was a great one, too.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yes. Okay. But aside from novelty cereals, actually, Waffle Crisp. Original.
Oh, yes! I remember Waffle Crisp. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, you talk about some good milk. That created some good milk to sip.
Oh, for sure. Cereal, and there's such like a market just for even cereal milk. Like the just the leftover milk. It's the gift that keeps giving, because you not only have a delicious bowl of cereal, but now you have this milk. It's fantastic.
Well, speaking of milk, have you ever gone cow tipping?
Absolutely not. I actually don't even drink regular milk. I use almond milk.
Yeah.
So, no, I have not gone cow tipping. That's
just, like, that's just really left field. Cow tipping.
So, one
like, that's a real jerk move.
Right. Well, in that case, it'd be a jerk move.
Oh, was that the punchline you were looking for? Wow, ladies and gentlemen, Matt Michaels.
Leave it to him.
You're on a Seinfeld level right now.
That was the joke I didn't know I needed this afternoon.
That's awesome. So I've got to ask.
Yes.
Cereal first or milk first? And why is milk first wrong?
Okay. Cereal first.
Okay.
Yep, all that's the good. Time.
Yep. All right.
Every time.
All right.
If you say the opposite, then here, okay. I feel like I get really heated about this, guys. So there's a proper ratio. There's a proper formula. You pour your cereal first. You then pour your milk until your cereal rises ever so slightly in your bowl. That is the perfect ratio. If you pour your milk first, then you end up having an imbalance. You'll probably run out of cereal first, and then you'll have to add more cereal, which happens sometimes, regardless. But you might run out of milk first, and then you have too much cereal in your bowl, and then you have to add more milk. It just becomes this endless cycle. So I feel like the only proper way to get your exact right ratio is to do cereal first.
Perfect.
Yeah. You know, you have a lot of personality. You definitely, yeah, absolutely. And you definitely, you know, come from an acting background. So let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. What is your guilty pleasure movie?
Guilty pleasure movie. It's funny because I don't really feel guilty about it, but probably the movie Clueless.
Oh.
I feel kind of like, I feel silly about it now because I live out here, but whereas before, that seemed like a completely foreign land that I had no idea or concept of.
Yeah.
So the scene where they're talking about, like, how to get to someone's house, yeah. Like, oh, but then I'd have to get off the freeway, and then you'd have to do this. Well, you could take the 101 to this thing. I'm like, oh my God, that's friggin' real. Like, that happens now. So I feel like I connect with it more, but it makes it kind of feel like, oh, well, I thought that was, like, the coolest thing, and now I, like, sit in bumper-to-bumper traffic, and, like, I get it now.
Let me ask you this around that topic. Did you freak out the first time you saw the actual Circus Liquor sign?
I don't think I freaked out, but I think I had, like, a, yeah, okay, that's awesome. And now when I watch the movie and I say, hey, I've driven by that, it's kind of just like a fun moment. It's not a freak out by any means, but it's kind of like a cool, huh, cool, I get that now. That makes sense. I've seen that.
And is there, I mean, what is your favorite part about living in Los Angeles?
Hands down, I think just the weather. Like, I grew up on the East Coast and I went to college in New England, so pretty much like as early as October to as late as like April could be absolute hell. So the fact that I feel much more comfortable, even I feel like, oh God, knock on wood, I feel like even the hot aren't too hot.
Right.
It took me a lot to develop into, oh right, I should probably wear shorts today as opposed to my all black straight leg skinny leg wardrobe. But that's still a work in progress. I'm still getting there, but for the most part, I think it would be weather-wise, just not really having to think about it and knowing, like, okay, like whatever I put on, I don't need to put like 12 layers and mittens and shovel my car out of a parallel parking spot. You
yeah.
know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty rough.
So, you know, one question that I know you've probably gotten before, but I want to go just a little bit deeper. You definitely have a listening passion for opera music. And it's quite interesting because I wouldn't say that I have the same passion as you, but I remember I was introduced to opera for the first time. I believe I was like 13 And because my grandmother used to listen to it all the time. And so she was kind of trying to break down what opera music is for a 12-year-old. And he said a beautiful part of it is called the aria. So it kind of stuck with me, and that's why I named my first child after the aria. Which for these uncultured guys, an aria is basically okay, except
it's
for maybe
a casino.
See,
you named your kid
no,
after
I did
casino.
Not. No, I didn't. Aria is a vocalist. Is a vocalist that is accompanied by orchestra music in an opera. Okay, so anyways, what would you say that with opera that the first time you fell in love? Because I think that's something that I don't know if you've gotten a chance to really dig deep into.
So I think for me, I definitely grew up around it. There was always a lot of music, and I remember like my grandparents would listen to it. And I remember there's a song by Andrea Bocelli. He was with, I believe it was Sarah Brightman. And there's a song called Conte Partito, and it was Time to Say Goodbye. And I remember, I cannot recall how old I was. Maybe I was like 9 or 10 or something like that. And half of the song, or no, all of the song I believe is in Italian except for like maybe one or two lines in English. And I sat with the cassette tape. Yes, a cassette tape. and I kept rewinding and playing and writing out phonetically what I was hearing so that I could sing it for my family.
Wow.
So I actually just, I memorized the sounds of the words,
right?
And I had no idea what the hell I was saying. And I would like sing it for my family because I knew that they liked it. And then I ended up doing like voice lessons, and my college degree is in vocal performance, so I like trained for a decade on singing. But I think that was one of the first times where I realized like that it was something I loved to do, that it was something I really enjoyed, and how I felt when I sang it was indescribable.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because obviously, you know, coming from an Italian family, I'm sure there was quite a bit of opera going on. Any Mario Lanza being played in the house?
Mario Lanza, absolutely. Pavarotti, huge.
Yeah.
It's funny. There's actually, I think he's either Swiss or German or Austrian, but his name is Jussi Bierling, and he's actually fantastic. So I remember, I think my mom had a vinyl of his passed down from either her mother or father or something like that. But yeah, that's another singer I really enjoy listening to.
And
now everyone's on Spotify, so it's really weird.
Including the Vegas Bad Boys of podcasting. So go ahead and subscribe on Spotify if you're listening, please.
Isn't that like a crime to shamelessly plug on your own show?
Oh, Kathy just said that. Yeah.
I was joking.
I love it. Full circle.
You know, a lot of people, when they discover opera, they found it the way that I can say I found it, and that's through Bugs Bunny.
Please explain.
Hallelujah.
That?
Yes. There's so much classical influence in cartoons,
yep.
Like old school cartoons. Hell yes.
Do you have a favorite character from cartoons in general? You can go any era.
Oh, man. Right. I mean, honestly, right now, it's pretty much any one of the Belchers from Bob's Burgers.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the past 2 or 3 years, I've been Tina Belcher. I just have a Tina Belcher costume, and it's like you know, in Parks and Recreation when Ron Swanson's like, this is my Halloween costume, and it's just the same thing every year. This is my Halloween costume, it's just I'm Tina Belcher. but I think when I was growing up, probably, man, I can't even remember like any like old like Looney Tunes or anything. Maybe Marvin the Martian. Oh,
sure.
No, it was the big, I can't remember his name. Maybe Fluffy? The big red, like, hair monster?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he had, like, the tennis shoes on.
Precious? No, not, yes, but I can't remember his name. It was something, like, Precious or Fluffy, like, something where it sounded like very unassuming, but he was this big like.
Yeah,
I remember really just liking him for some reason.
It is...
What's his name? Because I remember he's just big and red, almost like a heart, like a furry heart on the top of his head.
Yes,
he had like two humps.
Yep,
yep. And he had like some teeny, really cool teeny shoes on that just totally out of nowhere. Like he had teeny shoes, but nothing else.
So here's the
And I love that. He was just so odd and just like kind of quirky. And I really enjoyed that.
Here's the thing. The actual name of the monster is Gossamer.
Gossamer? That sounds like an investment firm or something.
Isn't that a fabric? I love
right?
it. Oh, genius.
Gossamer.
You know, I think, you know, sometimes the hard-hitting questions, you know, come through us every once in a while. And my hard-hitting question to you would be, what would be a question in Truth or Dare that you'd take the dare over the truth?
Ooh, that's good. That's spicy.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. Can we still give her a dare just so it's like cooler? It's a joke, actually.
Yeah, because I feel like it's so dependent on what... Wait, I haven't played Truth or Dare in a really long time. How does it work? Are you told... You have to pick one or the other first, and
right.
you don't get to know what the other one is,
no.
right?
Exactly.
True.
Oh, pardon, sorry.
Oh, you can shit all you want on this show. Oh, you can shit on our show all you want.
Just as long as you flush and
never,
wipe.
But you know what I mean.
Yes.
Okay, honestly, this and just because it's so topical in what I'm doing, when people ask who's your favorite wrestler?
Yeah.
I would take the dare because I literally cannot give an answer.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I think I would. It's that would be like my plead the fifth kind of thing. Like I'll go ding dong ditch or something to my neighbors because I can't. You know. So that would be my question that I would take the dare on.
Awesome. Yeah. That's actually. Yeah. That definitely makes you think for sure. So
and everyone knows
so diplomatic, you know.
Well, everyone knows the real answer to it is the Disco Inferno,
because that's everybody's choice. Why wouldn't it be?
Got their answers, man.
So really quick, Kathy. One thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to do a quick word association thing. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to give you a list of names. And I just want for you to tell me the first thing that pops into your head about these names that I'm going to throw out for you. And we're going to do this for 70 seconds. Are you ready?
Oh, okay. Terrifying.
Right?
All right.
All right. Let's get it going.
Sin okay. City Steve, 70 deadly seconds starts now.
Brian Cage.
Muscles.
Joey Ryan.
Dick.
Jazz.
Hands. No.
Tyler Bateman.
Mustache.
MJF.
Scarf.
Scorpio Sky.
Fruity Pebble.
Sarah Wolf.
Green hair.
Jervis Cotton Belly.
Fluff.
Tony the Tiger.
Champ.
Captain Crunch.
Horatio.
Chris Bay.
Ice.
Suede Thompson.
Care Bear.
And last but certainly not least, Heather Monroe. Seven,
six, Cat.
Awesome. She survived.
She survived.
I'm not gonna lie. My heart is actually still racing.
That's awesome.
Anytime there's like a time limit on anything, I'm like, oh God, oh no, oh boy.
Well, you are definitely like a pro. And with that is our next segment, where I hope that you will be as a pro with the seven deadly seconds. This is the part where I annoy the shit out of Matt Michaels by going a huge explanation of this next segment, which is a time where we ask our guests to Please share with us a memory or story where you have been in a situation that has been so horrendous, so crazy, so out of place, whether it was at the grocery store line, in a bathroom stall, at a pool hall, or at someone's bar mitzvah, whatever the heck may be. Please, Kathy, share with us an oh shit moment. There's no time limit, by the way.
Oh, okay. Is it just the 7 seconds it takes to explain?
Right. Yes, yes. Yeah. Oh. Matt Michaels rolls his eyes all the time.
It takes him just as long to explain the oh shit moment as it does for the entire 70 deadly seconds.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I can't even think of anything.
Have you ever dropped a bowl of cereal?
No, that'd be an oh shit moment.
That would be an oh shit moment.
Actually, no.
Okay.
That, I would just eat off the floor. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
No. Oh, wow. Jeez. I should have been better prepared for this. I don't have, like, any oh shit stories. God, I'm just so even keel. I haven't gotten into any fights. I never had, no one really gives me a hard time. I'm trying to think of, like, any confrontations I've ever had. I don't think I've had any.
Have you seen any?
Okay, so it wasn't really an oh shit because it didn't directly affect me, but at the last Maverick Pro Wrestling show, when I was leaving the venue, it's in this, like, this area of downtown Los Angeles, and I feel like sometimes I'm still so, like, I've been here like 3.5-4 years, but I still am like, I don't even know what area I'm in right now. And I was walking out of the venue, and it's one of those venues where I make the announcement when I ring announce of, hey, when you're making your way to your car, just, you know, stay aware of your surroundings, you know, please, you know, be safe. And I left the venue and I looked to the right, and there is just a fire. There's just on the sidewalk. There is just something on fire. I have no idea what it was, and I quickly went to my car. But that was kind of like an oh, what? Why? Why is that happening? That was just something recently that I observed, and I'm like, what the actual hell? That's really not a good story. I wish I had a better one. Oh, okay. I got one. Sorry, that was my warm-up story.
There you go.
This was back when I I worked retail for a long time after I got out of college. And I was working in this store, and I worked at a beauty counter. And our counter was right by the escalator to go up to the second floor of the department store. And something happened, and all of a sudden, I see this person come tumbling down the escalator, and they kind of get stuck. So they tumble backwards, and they go over, like, head over heels once, and then they land on the stair part of the escalator with, like, their head toward the back, like, with, and then their feet are toward the top of the escalator. And I'm like, what the hell? So I, like, kind of, like, slide forward and I hit the shutoff button.
Wow.
But I realized that I should have stopped it with them closer to the top.
What the hell? Hold on. Like, I'm envisioning as you're telling this. Oh, my gosh.
So I stopped the escalator, and they're just facing the wrong way. They're just, like, laying down, upside down, on the escalator. And I'm like, in hindsight, I'm like, oh, shit, I should have helped them. They should have gotten to the top before I stopped it. I've already stopped it, and I can't start it. So, you know, we had to, like, everything is stopped moving, and then we, you know, get up and we help the person up, and they ended up being fine, thank goodness. But it was like, that was kind of like a traumatic oh shit moment. But thankfully they were okay. I also, while I was working retail, had a situation. The parking was so bad at another store I worked at, that someone actually bit someone's finger off in the parking lot over a parking spot.
Wow.
I want to say this again. Someone bit someone's finger off.
Oh, man.
What?
Over a disagreement on a parking spot. I guess the person put their finger in the other person's face. They're like, hey, you, get out of my whatever. This is my spot. I was here first. Jump.
Yep. Wow. Wow.
Sounds about right.
It was a holiday season. You yes. Know, like,
yeah. Together, exactly.
Like, impact, you know, like, that's just normal Tuesday.
Man. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you this. You are a sleeper when it comes to the oh shit moment, because there's tons of people that do this segment and they come prepared, and you just not only gave us not one story, two story, three stories. So when we do a compilation of the tops, you're on there.
I'm warming up.
Wow. Thank you so much.
I had to prove myself.
You definitely proved yourself. You're up there at the top of the top 10.
Top tier.
And I'm telling you, in a year, or in a couple of months, actually, for our year anniversary, I'll probably will pay Impact to maybe involve everybody voting to see the top 10 of the year's best oh shit moments. And you are up there as a true contender.
Oh, congratulations.
Can we get an applause? Can we get an applause? That was freaking phenomenally good.
Oh,
that's all I can say. I'm left speechless now.
That's awesome. You know, Kathy, my oh shit moment happened to be one time I was going to the store to get my Captain Crunch cereal, the original, the red box. And it was not available. And they had this peanut butter, and I just think that's absolutely ridiculous. So that was my old shit moment, and I was very upset. So I just...
I'm really sorry. And you know, it's funny, because I feel like the peanut butter... I'm such a cereal nerd. The peanut butter Captain Crunch, I feel like, is actually kind of like more rare, so it's actually like it tougher is. To find that than the original. So
yeah.
But I'm sorry it wasn't the experience you were looking for.
Yeah, well, I'm still getting over it. It's been about, 30 years?
30 years.
Wow.
It's a healing process.
It is.
Don't put that kind of pressure on yourself. You just take your time.
I am. One day at a time.
So Kathy, real quick before these guys turn my mic off, have you ever thought about, you know, having a business? You know, I'm thinking Kathy, serial consultant, to where, you know, you have a business and you consult people on proper cereal, because I feel that a lot of people haven't broadened their horizons with cereal, and they've probably lived this long time only eating two brands of cereal their whole life. You could really help bridge the gap for some people, you know, because those that don't know just don't put cereal in the right bowl, you know. You have a talent.
Thank you so much. You know, I mean, I don't want to say anything, but I mean, Scorpio Sky did really involve me for his first time eating cereal in 8 years.
Yes.
Because he wanted, you know, my expertise. So I would actually prefer the title Cereal Consultant to the Stars.
Oh, yes.
You know, perfect. Because I feel like that packs the extra punch. I would love to explore those kind of opportunities. I'm a very enterprising young person, so.
Well, you said, you know, to the stars. So let me ask you this. If you had one celebrity to choose that you got one night of, let's say, celebrity sex, no strings attached, no nothing, one person.
Where are we going with this?
Well, who would be the...
I thought it was one person to eat cereal with. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know you were going there. I had one person in mind, and now I can't go there.
Okay, well, who would you eat cereal with, and who would you sleep with?
Or both, if it's the same person, I guess.
Oh, man.
Who would you sleep in the bed eating cereal with?
Okay, so definitely eating cereal with Amy Poehler.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah.
There you go.
I think sleeping with Amy Poehler would be interesting too.
I mean, hey, you know what? Like while we're at it, I mean, whatever. It's 2019. Turn it around.
Yes, it is.
And, honestly, I adore that woman. I think she's absolutely fantastic, and I would love to kind of pick her brain, just because I think she's so talented, and she's so clever. She's so witty. So yeah, she would definitely be my celebrity crush, we'll say. Yeah. or if it's cereal, my celebrity crunch.
Oh, there you go. There we go. I like that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That, you know, bringing up cereal and having this conversation with you has been wonderful. And I think one of the things that I would love to know as we start wrapping up is, what do you think a 10-year-old version of yourself would tell you now?
Oh, my gosh. I think she would go, wow, you're actually doing it. That's crazy. Because I don't think I ever really thought I would, like, you know, you fantasize about, oh, I'd love to do this, and I, you know, I want to do whatever. But I think that 10-year-old me would look at it and go, like, hey, you actually, like, wanted to do something with your voice, and, like, it's not exactly what your family thought you were going to do with your opera degree. But I think 10-year-old me would be like, wow, like, everything actually turned out okay. Like, good job.
that's spectacular. One quick question about the opera, since you brought up, you know, the degree and everything. Have you ever worked as a waitress in one of the singing restaurants where they do opera at the table in the Italian restaurants?
So there's one in Philadelphia that I sang at, but I didn't actually work there.
Okay.
It wasn't even like an open mic, but I think we knew people there. It was somebody's birthday, and they're like, hey, can you let her sing? Which was always the case anytime we went anywhere. It's like, Alyssa, can you sing? Mm-hmm. Kathy, can you sing? so it was like, oh, God, okay. But yeah, that was something, that was like the closest I got to it.
Well, let's get you closer and let's do this. Kathy, would you sing?
Oh, no. I'm not prepared.
Come on, a couple
would
lines.
Would you want one of us to sing first so that way, no matter what comes out, I'll set the tone and the bar really, really low. But I'm only singing like right, Nightmare Before Christmas. I'm just letting you know.
Sweet. Oh, that's even better.
All right. All right, let's see what I can do.
Me.
All right. There are few who deny what I do, I am the best, for my talents are renowned far and wide. With the slightest expression of my ghost-like charm, I have seen grown men give out a streak. All right, that's
okay.
All
we got to stop you there because we don't want to pay for that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I tried to set the bar so low.
No, I don't care about the bar. I care about the rights.
Oh, well, he can cut that and chop it.
Oh.
He can cut it and chop it.
No, it's a Disney. If it wasn't Disney, I wouldn't worry.
I forgot. Disney's banging on anybody. I mean, come on. Oh, they caused the divorce with Spider-Man.
Right.
Oh, no, so bad. Is opera public domain? Do we know?
Yeah, it's opera.
It's opera.
Wow, that's so confident.
Do we want opera? Is that what we want? Is that what we're all cool with?
I want opera.
Opera or show tune, whatever you're more comfortable with.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know.
Okay. Let's see. Let's see if I can still do this, because most of what I've been doing is either singing in the shower or karaoke. So both
awesome.
Of those.
Awesome. Even better.
Different. Quando vengo soletta della via, la gente sosta e mira.
Ture varia, lots of more masia.
Not for you, that's the booth for him.
The booth for Matt.
The booth for Matt. You interrupted an angel singing.
Right? I'm just saying that I think we do it perfectly. And
do you?
I really need some Italian food now.
Is that your fantasy? Oh, is that your fantasy?
Yeah.
No, my fantasy right now is a nice like shrimp linguine.
That does sound good, actually.
Ooh. I guess, yeah.
Sounds expensive.
Well,
thanks, Dad.
All pasta aside, all I can tell you is thank you so much, Kathy, even though that was interrupted by Papa Michaels over here.
But that was amazing. You have a very beautiful angelic voice.
Yes.
Anytime in the future, are you ever going to be singing live? I know you said you only do the shower, which would be inappropriate for me to sit on the toilet and listen to you. But karaoke wise, in the LA area, that publicly people could listen to you sing, is that something you do?
You know, I've actually never extended it to, like, hey, I'm going to be doing karaoke here. It's always just been, you know, go out with friends or just a random thing.
Ireland's 32, Kathy. That's the place to go.
Where is it?
It's called Ireland's 32. It's on Burbank Boulevard in the Valley. And,
okay.
Yeah, Sunday nights, I think they still do karaoke there. Fabulous little place.
Well, I will have to give that a little look-see then. One of my favorite things.
Awesome.
Awesome. Hey, Kathy, so tell us what events you have coming up so everyone knows when to see you.
Yeah, okay. So, honestly, you can always see me on Instagram and Twitter. So, on Instagram, it's at Kathy Campanelli. On Twitter, mixing it up, it's Campanelli Kathy. I will be at Glam on Second Fridays. I'll be back at West Coast Pro Wrestling in San Francisco December 6th. And honestly, I'm always posting stuff on social media to kind of where you can find me.
Right, yeah, you're pretty active on here.
It's most of my day. It's just been on my phone.
Where in the world is Kathy Campanelli?
On phone. On phone.
Boy, calm down, guys. Calm down. Calm down.
It's just Matt.
Whenever Matt starts singing, yeah, like, the audience.
Just, I mean, it just
wait. Booze. It's not just me. You got booze too, jerk.
I got booze because I started in a copyright infringing or something. I don't know. I mean, I didn't sound horrible, but I didn't sound great.
Well, Kathy, thank you for hanging out with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Vegas,
that voice
of podcasting, holding you down since day one,
January 2019.
The hottest podcast in the universe.
There's like 1,000 podcasts.
Vegas Bad Boys, day one, say
different, thoughts, outrageous,
interview,
exciting,
interesting,
intriguing,
amazing,
funny, intergalastic.
Bad Boys.
If you haven't listened to all of our podcasts, take a listen of what you might have missed. JTG.
Shad and I. Shad was the big guy. Is it the same size? One is a little bit fatter, right?
Yeah.
One is cut. Yeah. One is kind of like pudgy.
Yeah, that's Angelo. Oh,
yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of similar to me, Shad. Yeah, I'm kind of like the...
Ow, Snow.
Well, yeah, I did. I actually wrote a book. I also, just so you guys know, I do magic for the blind.
Wow.
It's my way of giving back to the community, yeah. You know. It's, let me tell you. It's like, it's like, is this your card? And it's like, I don't know. And you're like, it is. Ta-da. Like, oh, my God.
Jeff Cobb.
You know, I don't plan to wrestle in my late 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s. Like, you know. And, but, you know, again, I say that now, but...
Right.
it's like the weirdest addiction ever, you know? Like,
yeah, we know. B. Brian Blair.
All of a sudden, I look in the mirror and Terry's, you know, spanking his Woody on top of the back of Coco's ass. And his pants ripped, and I'm going, oh my gosh, man, we're going to prison.
Vicky Guerrero.
You know, you are definitely, in our minds, a Hall of Famer. Because...
I'll give you $5 later, guys.
Theo Landers.
How do you guys do this? Are you guys in like a recording studio, or are you guys in a home studio?
Hey, you don't contact WWE Creative and ask them how they write Raw, do you?
We're
all in a bathroom.
We're in a right bathroom. Now. Yeah, we're in a bathhouse. Right, we're
in
all
the bathtub.
You're in a bathhouse.
RVD.
If I hit a squirrel with my car, it would totally ruin my day. I mean, I would, like, I'd get out of the car and I'd try to save it, you know. And
Selena De La Renta.
When you say Selena at work, Selena in real life,
it's about the same. It's a preparation for my everyday life. It's about the same my preparation for MLW. The only thing is I need twice the amount of makeup and probably tighter dresses. But
Nick Aldis.
I do love Vegas. And you know what's funny is that, like, the first time I went was actually for TNA when I debuted with the Main Event Mafia. I'd never been to Vegas before then.
Wow.
In many ways, it's really the showbiz capital of America.
Yep.
You know, like, there's so much show business going on there all the time. I just love that vibe.
Vegas Bad Boys, a podcast, has over 50 interviews, and they keep on coming. Make sure you subscribe. Keep listening. Write a review about our podcast. Come to our live events. Participate in our contest. Like our social media. And most importantly, tell all your family and friends about us. We're Vegas born, and we are Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.